Well, welcome to the 2018 Pro-Life Leadership Call. This is Eric Scheidler, Executive Director of the Pro-Life Action League. I'm so glad to be joined on this call by pro-life leaders from cities and towns all over the United States to talk about how we can work together this year as effectively as possible to fight abortion. Now, I'd like to ask you to join me in offering a brief opening prayer. Our Father in Heaven, we thank you for this day, for this evening, for this opportunity to come together and talk about the work that is so close to all our hearts, the work that you've laid before us to fight for the lives of our unborn brothers and sisters, to expose the dark deeds of Planned Parenthood and other abortion providers, to mourn for the children who've been lost for abortion, to carry that mourning out into the society around us so that we can develop a heart for unborn children in the breast of every American. We ask you to bless our deliberations this evening, to give us strength and courage as we step forward into this new year of pro-life activism, and to allow us to work with you in the way that you want us to save the lives of unborn children and transform this culture. We ask this all in Jesus' name. Amen. I'd like to give a brief overview of the call, and as more folks are joining in, I'll again introduce myself. I'm Eric Scheidler, Executive Director of the Pro-Life Action League. Many of you may know me from different activities that we've cooperated on over the course of the years, going back to the Stand Up for Religious Freedom rallies back in 2012 and the Protest PP rallies that were held in the wake of the horrific scandal revealed by David Daleiden's videos of Planned Parenthood harvesting aborted babies' body parts, the National Day of Remembrance for Aborted Children, and all kinds of other events. Others of you may be more familiar with my father, Joe Scheidler, and I'm happy to say he'll be joining us on this call in just a little while to give us a few thoughtful words. So I'd like to give you an overview of the call. We're going to start with a conversation with Eric Schmitz from the SBA list, Susan B. Anthony list, with an inside scoop from Washington, what's going on in the nation's capital. Then we'll talk about the schedule we've already put together for many of the regular nationwide events you might be familiar with for 2018. Then we're going to review some brand new initiatives to confront Planned Parenthood, build public support for the pro-life message, and expose the truth about abortion this year, 2018. Then we'll talk about some ways that the Pro-Life Action League can help the pro-life outreach you're already doing to be more effective in the coming year, things that we can bring to your organization or to your group, your local activists, whether you're big or small. Then we'll have some reflections from my father, veteran pro-life activist Joe Scheidler, and then finally we'll end with your questions and comments and fill out the hour. Before we jump into the program, I suggest that you have pen and paper ready at hand to write down any notes, any questions or comments you might have, key dates that come up during the course of this call, and so forth. You should know that this call is being recorded, and a link to the recording will be sent out tomorrow, along with some notes from the call. And that email will also include a pro-life leadership survey to provide you the opportunity to give additional feedback and to help my staff prepare for the year ahead and know how we best can serve you. So with that overview, I'd like to turn now to my first guest, Eric Schmitz. Now, originally, we were planning to have former Colorado Congresswoman Marilyn Musgrave on the call, but unfortunately she came down with the flu this very morning and was not able to join us. But she sent one of her lieutenants to be with us on this call. Eric Schmitz has been the legislative director for the Susan B. Anthony List for 3 years, lobbying members of Congress and their staffs on critical pro-life legislation. So, Eric, you with us? I know Eric's on the call. You might need to get unmuted. Great. Thanks, Eric. Good to hear from you. So let's jump right into it. You're here to share with us some insights from Washington, and I'm sure that the first question in everybody's minds goes back to last year. Now, last February, many on this call collaborated with the Susan B. Anthony List and with 40 Days for Life and the Pro-Life Action League to hold over 200 defund PP rallies all over the country. We had massive press coverage of this event, coming on the wake of the Women's March and all the counter-protests and everything, and we seem to have tremendous momentum. So what happened? Why weren't we able to defund Planned Parenthood last year?
So without getting too detailed or boring, mostly everybody knows on the call, I believe, that they we attach the defunding Planned Parenthood language to a special bill. It's called the Reconciliation Bill, which requires only 51 votes. And so the strategy that the pro-life Republicans used in the House and the Senate was to add the defunding Planned Parenthood language to the Obamacare repeal legislation. So this was important for us because not only would it defund Planned Parenthood, but we would also eliminate funding for plans that cover abortion. So it was a really big opportunity. We got extremely close. We were so close. They brought the bill to the floor, the U.S. Senate, to send it to a conference. They had Vice President Mike Pence ready there in the chamber. Our President Marjorie Dannenfelder was there waiting outside, and they were getting ready for the vote. And unfortunately, Senator John McCain from Arizona decided to vote against the legislation. And if I remember correctly, he voted against the bill not for the content, but for the way that the bill was handled. He didn't like the fact that it didn't go through a committee process and a number of other reasons that, I wasn't, and most of the pro-life movement was not satisfied with. So it was extremely disappointing, but that is how close we got. We got within one vote. Three Republicans voted no.
So where do we stand with the defunding battle today? Now that we've seen a little bit of a change in the Senate.
Yeah. So for those of you who were watching the some of the special elections, the one that impacted our effort the most was the Alabama special election to replace Jeff Sessions. And unfortunately, a pro-abortion senator was elected in the state of Alabama. And now we no longer have the 51 votes required in order to defund Planned Parenthood. So we are really in a tough situation here for the rest of the year. Again, the process that we need and the amount of votes we need is 51. We need 50 votes plus the vice president, and we only have 49 pro-life votes in the U.S. Senate. So we are in a difficult position, but we are already looking ahead to the midterm election coming up, and we have a lot of opportunities there to increase the majority of pro-lifers in the U.S. Senate and to finally get to that 51 votes and move this thing across the finish line.
So does that mean that we should stop talking about defunding and wait until we have a more favorable Senate, or should we keep this issue alive?
We should definitely keep the issue alive. Just before I got on this call, I was checking in on my email and just seeing what was going on, and I guess Vice President Pence was in West Virginia today talking about different issues, specifically talking about the tax reform bill, and he was basically complaining about the Democrat Senator Joe Manchin, who voted no on the tax reform bill. And I was just checking his Twitter before I got on here today, and he also brings up that Senator Joe Manchin also voted no on Obamacare, and he also voted no to repeal Obamacare and voted no when it came to defunding Planned Parenthood. President Trump won West Virginia, I believe, by 42 points. I mean, it was a huge victory for President Trump in 2016, and the fact that Vice President Pence believes it's beneficial to keep talking about Planned Parenthood on his Twitter in order to go after vulnerable Senate Democrats is a very, very big deal, and we need to make sure that the Republicans do not forget that this is a major priority for the pro-life movement, and it's what our expectation is going into the next Congress.
So you probably answered this question, but I also wanted to ask about the bill that came up for a vote this week. It was Monday that the Senate voted 51-46 in favor of the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act, which would have banned abortion after 5 months. But that's short of the 60 votes needed to get past the filibuster, so the bill has not passed. Right. Why is it that important to fight for legislation even when we know that it won't pass? Because that's a criticism I hear a lot. I put out the call to contact your senators, and people say, well, what's the point? It's not going to pass.
Right.
And yet we still fight. Why do we have to fight for legislation even when we know it's not going to pass, or at least not pass in this session?
So I often feel the same frustrations that a lot of folks do, but I work with great people who have been in the movement for a very long time, like yourself and some others. And what they remind me when I get frustrated often dealing with Republicans and Democrats on Capitol Hill is that these are very long fights, and this is a long-term battle. And they remind me that things like the partial birth abortion ban took several attempts and ordered several votes, and I think it was vetoed twice by President Bill Clinton, and then finally signed into law by George W. Bush. And that was the partial birth abortion ban. It took had to go through several Congresses, several rounds, and actually be vetoed twice. So the only way they were able to get that done was building a record, getting senators and members of Congress to vote on it, making it an issue. If the pain-capable bill isn't voted on, then there's no conversation about the bill, and then people don't realize that how extreme some of their representatives are voting against a ban on late abortions. So it's extremely important that we continue to have these votes every Congress, put members, U.S. senators, and the House of Representatives on record so that we can continue to talk about it. And as you mentioned earlier that the over 200 rallies in the last year with the many of the organizations on the call and how much press they got. Well, the press reported it because it happened. And the press are going to report about these bills and debates when U.S. senators talk about it on the floor. So it's extremely important for us to keep that battle going.
So now the folks on this call are primarily activists. They're willing to get the word out to support a bill. They're willing to tell their friends to vote pro-life. But what really gets them fired up is the kind of public witness, the defund PP rallies and protests and so forth. How important are these protests, rallies, prayer vigils, and these types of events in the fight to win over public opinion and get bills passed that save children from abortion?
So Representative Musgrave and I lobby members almost every day, but members and staff. And the most important thing to them, right, aren't national groups coming in and talking to them and saying what we think is most important and little grassroots blasts. It's the activities that go on in their district. It's letters to the editor. It's people protesting outside of their office. Those are the kinds of things that get members' attention. It's things that are happening in their district. If there is an abortion clinic in their district or a Planned Parenthood nearby, the activism is what gets these members paying attention if something is happening in their district. I'd also like to mention that in 2018, in this upcoming election, there are 25 Democrats that are on the ballot, all of whom oppose defunding Planned Parenthood. 10 of those Democrats in the U.S. Senate that are up are in states that Donald Trump had won. This is a huge opportunity for the pro-life movement to really pad a majority and finally get this through, and continuing to have rallies, and specifically in those 10 states, going outside of their offices, setting up events, it has a huge impact on what's going on. So I would encourage leaders on this call and yourself and others to continue to be a public witness. When you think you're not being heard, there's somebody that's going to see this.
Well, Eric, thanks so much for your encouraging words and for your insights from Washington, D.C. Please give our best to Marilyn Musgrave and also to Marjorie Dannenfelser, who's been such a champion for us on Capitol Hill.
I will. Thank you for inviting me on the call today.
Absolutely. God bless. Well, folks, there you hear it. the impact of the kinds of events that we're talking about participating with you in this year is critical. That's our elected representatives notice when somebody is there outside their offices or, you know, making news in their districts, making those phone calls, holding those prayer vigils and valleys and prayer valley protests and rallies and all of the vigils and everything that we do. And another side of that is the public opinion that gets people elected. You know, we're able to expose the extremism of our elected officials when a bill like the paying cable bill comes up and gets voted on in the Senate, but it's only if people back home in those states where senators voted basically in favor of late-term abortion, it's only if those people care. It's only if they have a recognition of the moral outrage of abortion and that they're going to be upset about it and change the way they vote. So there's that side of it, too. We have to be softening the public around us to have a deeper heart for unborn children and to recognize that they should make this a priority. And so with that in mind, I'd like to share with you some of the dates for the regular nationwide events we'll be organizing in 2018. So get your pencils out and mark your calendars. On March 30th, we'll be holding the Way of the Cross for Victims of Abortion. That's Good Friday, the Way of the Cross for Victims of Abortion. For anyone not familiar with this event, this is a prayer event where we go out to the abortion facilities and pray a Way of the Cross, similar to the Stations of the Cross you may be familiar with. It comes out of the Catholic faith tradition, but we have an ecumenical Way of the Cross, so all people of the Christian faith should feel comfortable participating in this. This is an event we've been holding for many years, and every year it's gotten bigger and bigger with more and more people coming and joining that in. That's going to take place on March 30th. It's become a very beautiful, regular part of Holy Week for many pro-life activists, and this is something that if you've been involved with us on different types of events, you might want to try this one. On April 28th, we'll be holding the third annual National Protest PP. That's a Saturday. The third annual National Protest PP rally. The first of these came, obviously, 3 years ago, and it was a follow-up to the Protest PP rallies held in the wake of the horrible unborn baby body parts, the abortion victim body parts scandal that we learned about through the videos from David DeLeiden and the Center for Medical Progress. There was a great outcry, and people wanted to do something. So we organized these rallies and helped to you know, fan the flames of that story and share the truth about Planned Parenthood with millions of our fellow citizens through the coverage that we got and through the direct outreach that took place at hundreds of Planned Parenthood facilities across the country. And we're building on that momentum by holding an annual protest at Planned Parenthood. We feel this is a long overdue that the entire pro-life nation come together and protest at Planned Parenthood on an annual basis. So that's April 28th. Fast-forwarding to September. September 8th, again a Saturday, we'll be holding the National Day of Remembrance for Aborted Children. This is an event we started in 2013 with our partners at Citizens for a Pro-Life Society and Priests for Life, where we go to the burial places of aborted children. There are 50 places around the country, cemeteries and churches, where the remains of aborted children have been buried. And elsewhere around the country are hundreds of memorial markers at churches and cemeteries and sometimes even in public parks that have been set up in remembrance of the 60 million victims of abortion. This is a very solemn day of prayer and mourning for these children. Blessed are they who mourn. We take these words very seriously, and we go out and mourn for these children whose names we don't know, whose identities we don't know this side of eternity, but whose loss we truly feel in our hearts. In doing so, we prepare the way for the day when our entire nation will come to its senses and mourn for the victims of abortion. So that's September 8th. And then in December, we recommend the date of December 22nd, but this is a more flexible type of event. We'll be holding the annual Peace in the Womb Christmas Caroling Day. This is where we go out to abortion facilities, sometimes just to one facility or in places where there are more, like out here in the western suburbs of Chicago. We visit three different abortion facilities. In the city of Chicago, they go to four, sometimes five different abortion facilities to sing Christmas carols. And in so doing, to bring the hope, the light of Christmas joy to these places of despair. And we've seen again and again, including this year, that when we're out there singing these Christmas carols, it does something to the women going in. They are struck by a sense of the contradiction between Christmas and going for an abortion. you know, the birth of a child in very humble circumstances juxtaposed with, you know, today, where, again, we're willing to put to death those who are inconvenient. So that will be December 22nd or some other date that works for your group in the month of December, closer to Christmas. So those are our regular events. Now I'd like to tell you about a couple of new things that are coming down the line for you, some new Planned Parenthood initiatives for 2018. The first of these is a piece of literature the Pro-Life Action League is preparing to publish. We've just got the final couple of I's to dot and T's to cross. This is a flyer called Getting to Know Planned Parenthood, and it's, I like to call it a stealth flyer. That means you can't really tell quite what it is when you first look at it. It's designed to look like a Planned Parenthood promotional piece. And so, you know, people will take it from you not maybe knowing that it's, they won't know that it's a pro-life piece at all, especially if you say, wear a pink shirt when you pass it out. So this flyer will focus on the areas that people are most likely to care about. The regular people, we really keyed the language and the images and the topics that we brought up to appeal to the middleman, the person who's not a hardcore Planned Parenthood supporter or a hardcore pro-lifer, but somebody who maybe has heard a little bit and wants to know more, and this will draw them into learning the truth about Planned Parenthood in a way that we hope will allow them to really see the truth. And one of the things we're considering doing this year is to have a nationwide literature drop with this piece, where we supply, you know, tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of flyers around the country for folks like you to take to, well-trafficked areas and pass out to the public. Another initiative that we're emphasizing this year in our Planned Parenthood side of things is to try to protest as many Planned Parenthood fundraisers as we possibly can. We at the Pro-Life Action League protested a Planned Parenthood Roe versus Wade gala at a restaurant in Chicago just last week. We had a great crowd turnout, and we want to see more and more of this because along with several other leaders around the country, we're concerned that Planned Parenthood is kind of getting away with celebrating. Too often, they get together and they hold trivia nights and wine tastings and movie showings, and there's no one there to protest. These protests are very important. When you protest a Planned Parenthood fundraiser or movie viewing or what have you, it embarrasses Planned Parenthood. It really does. They hate it when we're there. It makes their supporters squirm. They want to feel like they're doing something good, and they want to be part of the elite that support this important organization in their minds. But when they see the reality of abortion, when they see people out there opposing what Planned Parenthood does, that makes them uncomfortable. Maybe they're less likely to come out next time and write that big check. Another important reason for these protests is that the venues where they hold these types of events, they hate when there's a protest there. And when we're out there, it makes it harder for Planned Parenthood to find space next year. And we've seen Planned Parenthood move from place to place to place around Chicago as we kind of chase them around, and different venues get sick of having us show up with our protesters. So this is also an ideal way to get media coverage, especially in smaller cities. We did not get any media coverage, not any, you know, mainstream local media coverage of our protest just last week. But in a smaller city, I mean, that's Chicago. It's very hard to break through the media in Chicago. Very busy town, and Planned Parenthood is really in sync with the media here. But in smaller cities and mid-sized cities, simply going out and protesting a fundraiser where Planned Parenthood is showing up can be a very, very powerful way to expose the truth about them and to share the pro-life message. One of the things we want to try to do here is to key these protests to a particular event. So, for example, a couple of years ago, this same event I was telling you about, Planned Parenthood's Roe versus Wade celebration, featured a keynote address by Senator Dick Durbin. Dick Durbin is one of Planned Parenthood's strongest allies in the Senate, but he used to be pro-life. Not many people realize this. So we went out with signs saying, you know, Dick Durbin, return to your pro-life roots. Another time, Planned Parenthood held a trivia night at another local brewery, and we went out with our own list of Planned Parenthood trivia. So we try to cleverly connect the things we're doing, the literature we pass out, the signs we come up with the event taking place, and we really want to help you to do the same thing. So later in the year, we'll be reaching out with more details about how to get started, how you can get started monitoring Planned Parenthood so you know when they're holding things, get on their email list, watch their Facebook page, and then offering ways that the Pro-Life Action League can consult with you to develop a really great plan for protesting these fundraisers so that more and more across the country, Planned Parenthood recognizes that local people like you are coming out to protest these kinds of events. Well, now I'd like to turn to a completely different type of project that we're launching this year for the very first time. And to help me do that, I'd like to invite Chris Iverson to join us. Are you with us, Chris?
Yes, I am. Hi, Eric. How are you doing?
Chris, I'm doing great. It's great to have you with us. Chris Iverson is a longtime pro-life activist. He's been very active throughout the Chicago area for many years. And probably a lot of you know him from Facebook, too, where Chris is very active. And every single time I sign on a new pro-life friend, I find out they're friends with Chris Iverson. So, Chris, good for you. You're spreading your reach both on the front lines out here in Chicago, but also on Facebook. Chris is a Pro-Life Action League board member, and he's going to be helping us with an exciting new project for 2018, building on some work that he's been doing around Chicagoland. So, Chris, tell us what you've been doing at overpasses around the Chicago area.
Sure, Eric, and thanks for having me on the call. So my friends and I, we've been doing pro-life overpasses for the past couple of years, and we've done about 70 different overpasses over the past couple of years, and it's been phenomenal. We've reached over 2 million views of our message, which is really just a huge number of people. And so we've got a lot of experience with it, and I'm glad to share it with everyone. So let me first explain what a pro-life overpass is for everyone. So it's a very simple concept. A small group of pro-lifers go on an overpass, which is just a bridge over an expressway, and the pro-lifers will go out and they'll display the signs so that people who are driving on the expressway can see the message on the signs. So it's really simple, and it's similar to the idea of a highway billboard, except that it's much more memorable and it's much harder to ignore than it is a billboard. And so, of course, the benefit of a pro-life overpass is the huge number of people that you reach. Any group that does this can reach well over 10,000 people in just a couple of hours. So that's what a pro-life overpass is, and to do it is really pretty easy. You need really three things. One, you have to have the signs. And it takes kind of specialized science to do this because of the nature of the overpass. And I know we're going to talk about, Pro-Life Action League is going to make those available for people to purchase. But you need two signs, one for each direction on the expressway. And then you need a minimum of five pro-lifers. And the reason why you need five people is it takes two people to hold each sign. And then somebody has to, go to the bathroom or go get some water or something. The fifth person can kind of swap out with them. And then the third thing you need is an overpass. And, usually look for expressways with lots of lanes of traffic. That's usually a good indicator that you get a lot of views. You want a sidewalk and a railing and nearby parking. So if you have, five people, two signs, one overpass, and you go out there for a few hours, and you can smile and wave to the cars and get a lot of responses and reach just thousands and thousands of people. So that's what we've been doing around Chicago.
So what kind of impact are you seeing?
Well, one of the exhilarating things about being on the overpass is actually the interaction with the drivers and the passengers on the expressway. So usually you see each car for about 3 to 6 seconds, and that's more than enough time to interact. So we smile and we wave, and then people will, truckers will honk their horns, people will, smile and wave back and flash their lights, and it's really fun, but it also means that they're seeing our sign, and they're responding to us in a positive way. And in Chicago, when we first started doing this, I thought we were going to get a lot of negative responses, but actually it was the opposite. We would actually count the number of hand gesture responses and how positive they were versus negative, and we would get about 80 positive hand gesture responses and 20 basically middle fingers. But 80% positive responses in Chicago is phenomenal when you're giving a pro-life message to the general public, so it's really exhilarating to see all that positive response.
So what kind of, legal issues are involved here? Do we have the right to do this? Has that been a concern?
Yeah, we had the same question. So we talked with some attorneys about this, and actually it's totally legal. So, the Supreme Court in many cases has talked about the robust free speech rights we have when we're on a public right-of-way or public sidewalk in this case. And so just because our audience is on an expressway, that doesn't change our right to free speech. So we've done this all around Chicago. We have friends who've done it in Texas and in California and Missouri, and there hasn't been a problem. And I know there are other people who have done overpasses on other issues in some other states, and they haven't had issues either. Just in the same way, a billboard can communicate a message to people on the expressway, so we can also with the overpasses.
Right. Excellent. So now this is a little bit different from some of the larger events that leaders on this call might be familiar with, like the National Day of Remembrance or the Protest PP Rally. How so?
Well, I would say there's two main differences. So one is on the resources that you need to do it, and the other one is on the effect or the benefits from it. So on the resources, you don't need as many people, right? A lot of these other events, we need like a large crowd, which can be sometimes difficult to get. But in this case, you need a minimum of 5 people. So if you can get a large crowd, that's great. But if you can only get 5 people, it's fine because you're still going to reach thousands and thousands of people on the expressway. But the other thing, though, that we need are specialized signs for this. So you do need kind of specialized signs. I know we're going to work on making those available for people to purchase. But then the benefits of the overpass is really what's quite amazing. So the main benefit, of course, is we're going to reach huge numbers of people, right? I mean, it's amazing when you think 5 people can reach 10,000, and that's just in a couple hours. And so that's the main benefit. And also we're reaching the general public, right? So if you get a great video on Facebook or in a pro-life news outlet, that's good. But most of the people you're going to reach are going to be other pro-lifers, and we need to be able to reach the general public with our message if we're going to, you know, change public opinion and then save, you know, women and babies from abortion. So that's important. And then also we're giving just the pro-life side of the story, right? So if you go on a secular news outlet, you can reach thousands of people, but you're also going to have the pro-life side, and they're going to try to give the pro-choice side. They're going to pull somebody from Planned Parenthood or the ACLU or whatever to give the other side. And, of course, we want to be on the news if we can be, but what's great about overpasses is we're only giving our side that's more persuasive, which is what we want. So if we think in terms of our own communities, it's amazing to be able to reach thousands of people, you know, near our home and in our area. But if we think about this from a nationwide perspective, coast to coast, we could reach, as a movement, hundreds of thousands, even millions of people with our message. And that makes it pretty strategic. We become a huge megaphone for the pro-life movement to the general public. And that's what's really exciting about this. It would be like getting on CNN and saying, here's our message to, you know, a million people, and then there's no rebuttal from the pro-choice side. So it's really amazing, but in order to do it, we'd all have to, you know, those of us on the call would have to want to sign up and get the signs and get out there. And I would say it is pretty easy to do. Some people can be, it's new and all that, but I've done it a lot of different places, and it's pretty simple to do, and it has amazing results.
Well, Chris, thanks so much for sharing this with us. Really appreciate you coming on with us today.
Thanks.
So, everybody, we're looking at a weekend in June for the inaugural National Pro-Life Overpasses Project. We're still putting together the plan on that, and a lot of that depends on the interest that we have from you, because there will be a financial component to create these frames, the frames that actually hold the signs, and to ship the frames. This is an expensive project, so it's going to require a contribution from local activists like you to get involved. We're looking at leaning on our donors to help us with this as well, but there'll be an element of cost for you to do this. But a really great opportunity. Just think about the impact it would have had, when there's a vote like this week on the Pain Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. If that same weekend or the weekend before, there were signs about abortion, so people were connecting it to a response that they'd already had to this issue. This could become a very important tool for us to help, not only change the culture's attitude, but also to help with some of the legislative or political or electoral issues that come along. And I want to plug here again the Pro-Life Leaders Survey that we're going to send out a link to tomorrow following up on this call. This will be an opportunity for you to let me and Chris and my team over here at the Pro-Life Action League know if this is the kind of project you want to take part in. And again, one that requires so few people. You don't need to get out 100 folks or 200. So we've seen some rallies that have had 2,000 people. You can do an incredible thing with just 5 people with this project. And now I'd like to turn to another project we want to launch this year called They Were Our Brothers and Sisters. And I want to tell you a little bit about this. This past summer, the Pro-Life Action League launched this new campaign, They Were Our Brothers and Sisters, featuring some very carefully selected abortion victim photos on large signs with captions designed to inspire sympathy for unborn children. And I'll try to draw you an example of one of those signs. We have a picture of a baby that was born in Romania, and we looked through literally hundreds of photos of this particular child, and we picked the one that we felt was sort of the most peaceful face we could find, the least gory, that really emphasizes the humanity of this child aborted at 15 weeks, rather than the horror and shock of abortion itself, the procedure. And we wrote the caption on this picture of this little child's face. It's actually a very beautiful face if you look at it. We wrote the caption, "His only baby picture." We also had some signs depicting life at various stages. Life is beautiful at 7 weeks and so forth. And we had an accompanying literature piece that spoke only about the humanity of abortion victims. It didn't talk about legislation. It didn't talk about abortion as murder. It didn't talk about the abortion industry. All it did was talk about the loss of each of these children's lives, the little girl who will never take her first step, the little boy who will never dribble his first basketball. The Pro-Life Action League staff and volunteers were absolutely blown away at the impact this new display had in 2018. We had people stopping to take pictures of our signs that they could show to their friends. One woman was taking a picture to show her daughter, who just the day before had told her she wanted to get an abortion or was thinking about abortion. So people were stopping to take these pictures to try to change someone's mind about abortion that they knew. Now, of course, I realize that some pro-lifers may be reluctant to show these images, or maybe even be associated with those who do. So I've invited my friend Jonathan Van Maren from the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform to join us and share his expertise in this important area. So give me just a moment here while we plug in Jonathan from Canada.
Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us on this 2018 Pro-Life Leadership Call. Now, you just published the book, Seeing is Believing, Why Our Culture Must Face the Victims of Abortion. Why did you write the book?
I wrote the book so that people can truly understand why abortion victim photography is one of the most essential tools the pro-life movement has. Because for obvious reasons, abortion victim photography seems scary to people. So the media usually tries to portray those who employ these tactics as, shouting, angry white men. And people are also often of the opinion that if you show something horrible, the response is going to be to turn people off. And that's true in a very limited way, but it illustrates a misunderstanding of the difference between marketing and social reform. So in marketing, you're trying to appeal to somebody. You're trying to attract them to a product. In social reform, so that would be the pro-life movement, the abolitionists, the civil rights movement, and I could go on, you're trying to repel people from something by showing them the consequences of that action. So often abortion victim photography has been judged by marketing standards when in reality the pro-life movement's employment of abortion victim photography is simply the latest stage in 350 years of social reformers using imagery of the victims to change culture. And it's a really essential fact that people need to know that not one social reform movement in the history of advocating for victims has ever been successful without using imagery, evidence of what happened to those victims. So I wrote this book so that people could understand why we use it, understand the impact it has, and sort of rescue these tactics from a lot of the misconceptions that are floating around.
So, people use these victims in these victim images in different kind of ways, and probably the one that folks are most familiar with is taking abortion victim photos out into the public square and holding them on street corners and things like that, something that we do at the Pro-Life Action League. But it also includes, even mailing pictures of abortion victims to people, which I know you guys have done up at the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform, and victim photos that show up online or in pamphlets. There's a lot of different kind of ways that we use these images. But what kind of hard evidence can you offer that seeing these victim photos really changes people's minds?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And here at CCBR, we have a huge team of young people that are committed to shifting public opinion on abortion in Canada. So as you can imagine, we don't have people that are essentially choosing this career to the exclusion of others that they had planned on without making sure that what we're doing is actually effective. And so what CCBR does is we take a look at the public square and we look at which avenues pro-lifers have the legal right to protest in. And then what we do is we consider ourselves lawyers for the preborn children who are being killed and have been killed in the public square, and we develop impactful and effective projects for each of those avenues. So we'll have displays set up on street corners to engage passersby. We have different displays where we go to high schools, we're on campuses, and then we've spent years developing literature that we deliver door to door. And we test that literature each time to ensure that the messaging is having the maximum impact. So what we've actually done is we hired an independent pollster to poll before and after we would cover, in Canada they're called ridings, I think they'd be called districts or constituencies in the U.S. He polled before or after on people's views on abortion, and he actually asked them if it was abortion victim photography that had shifted their perspective. And what that set of polling data showed was that more than 60% of people who saw an abortion victim photo shifted towards a more negative view of abortion as the result of seeing that photo. And we've done multiple sets of data. The lowest number we've ever gotten is just over 35% of people who receive this are shifting to a negative view of abortion, which, to be completely frank, is even better than I thought it would be. I've seen a lot of women change their minds and cancel their abortions as a result of seeing this imagery, but I suspect that the number would be right around between 30 and 40% of people who had shifted. So we actually have concrete data now by an independent pollster, and we had a statistician analyze that data to ensure that we weren't reading into the conclusions things we wanted to find. And so first of all, we actually have hard statistical evidence. And second of all, of course, and I'm sure, Eric, you could share many of these stories as well, but we have actually had the privilege of meeting children who are alive, children who aren't in dumpsters, because their mothers saw that abortion wasn't just a choice. They came face-to-face with what that choice meant and what they were choosing and for who. And the anecdotal evidence, what we've discovered is those mountains of stories actually form data points on a trend that goes against abortion when people see the graphic evidence. So there's a reason I wrote a whole book about this. There's a lot of different ways we can indicate the success of abortion victim photography, but anecdotal evidence and statistical evidence are two, I think, that are primary proofs.
So would you say that because these victim photos are so impactful, we should just be using them all the time, every opportunity that we possibly can? Or are there other factors to consider in when and how we use them?
Yeah, as I mentioned in the answer to your last question, there's always factors that determine how AVP can best be used. So abortion victim photography is, and I think that my book makes a good case for this, the most powerful tool the pro-life movement has at its disposal, and powerful tools need to be used carefully. So, for example, our display on university campuses is different than the display that we present to high school students. Our postcards, obviously, are created for older people. We essentially look at each area. We look at the target audience of that area, and we create projects that are most likely to impact the minds of that target audience. And so I would just say that in whatever part of the public square you seek to bring your message, just to be very mindful of who your target audience is so that you can essentially modify your project for maximum impact. That being said, I think one point that's important to recognize is, as one pro-life leader often mentions, while pro-lifers are often unsure of how impactful abortion victim photography is, the abortion industry and abortion activists are not unsure of this. I have two chapters in my book that actually reviews this, but most top abortion activists actually cite abortion victim photography as the number one challenge to their worldview, because the entire ideology of choice is contingent on the debate remaining about abstractions. And so it's the task of pro-life activists who know that abortion isn't an abstraction, it's not reproductive health care, it's not women's rights, it's an act of violence that dismembers a developing human being. And it's our job to remove the debate from the abstractions, show people the truth, tell people the truth, so that they can move to our side of the fence and so that lives can be saved.
Now, Jonathan, many of the leaders on this call have been involved in just the kind of use of abortion victim photography you're talking about, maybe in some of the protest PP events that they've done with the Pro-Life Action League and our coalition partners. But others on this call have been involved in other kinds of activities exclusively, say things that are more focused on prayer, like the National Day of Remembrance for Aborted Children, where mm-hmm. it would be inappropriate to have these kinds of images, really, because this is a mourning for the victims in, you know, a cemetery or at a church. So we've got different kinds of levels of comfort. What would be a parting reflection or comment you might offer to someone participating in this call today who's reluctant to publicly display the victims of abortion?
For starters, I would say that AVP has to be portrayed prayerfully, because we recognize that the power of prayer is essential to the success of the pro-life movement, and so prayer should be done in conjunction with any of these projects. Secondarily, what I always tell people who are interested in volunteering for CCBR or getting involved in these projects is pick a project that suits your comfort level. So what I would say is that abortion victim photography doesn't just include handing out literature. It doesn't just include holding a sign. You can utilize this tactic and utilize this extremely powerful method of shifting public opinion in a variety of different ways, and you should simply pick a method that suits your level of comfort while you get the training and experience that might lend itself to you wanting to do more.
Well, Jonathan, thank you so much for coming on to this call today to share your insights as one of the foremost experts on the use of abortion victim photos in the public square. And on behalf of everyone on the call, I want to wish you and Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform the best of luck in 2018.
Oh, thanks a lot, Eric.
Well, thank you to Jonathan for coming on this call. And I want to let you know, if you're excited about what Jonathan had to say, please watch for a link in my email tomorrow following up on this call. There'll be a link to a page in there that further explains this display. They were our brothers and sisters, to take it out of the realm of the theoretical. So you can see the signs we used. You can even see some videos that I shot while we were out on the street talking about the kind of thinking behind each one of those signs. You'll also have the opportunity on that survey that's going to go out tomorrow to let me know if this is something you might be interested in, whether it's the full display of signs or even just the literature component. We have this standalone literature piece that you can use as well. Well, we've been talking about all the different things that you might want to participate in with the Pro-Life Action League, but it's not just about working together on nationwide events. We want to be able to help you in any way that we can with the pro-life work that you're already doing, aside from the stuff that you might join up with us to do. So I want to, at this point, ask my fellow league staffer, Matt Yonke, to come on the call and tell us about some of the ways the Pro-Life Action League can be of help to you. Matt?
Yeah, hi, everybody. my name is Matt Yonke. I work with the Pro-Life Action League, and I've talked to or emailed a lot of you over the years as we've worked together on these various projects. And like Eric said, it's central to our mission at the Pro-Life Action League to be able to share what we've learned over the years of activism, decades of combined experience between Joe and Eric and myself and the rest of our staff with everybody around the country. And we have opportunities all the time where folks call us up and say, we're dealing with this problem, we're dealing with that problem, what do we do? And we're here to help, and we're happy to help any way we can. In fact, in 2018 already, we've had several calls from around the country. We're helping a team in Flossmoor, Illinois, down south from us a bit, fight a new Planned Parenthood facility. We've had some other folks dealing with some police trouble. And so I just want to share a few of the things that you might run into that you might call us about, but don't consider this at all an exhaustive list. If you run into any kind of problem that you're not sure what to do about in pro-life activism, we are here to help and would love to help you out. So some of the things you might run into are, like I said, dealing with police. So we had some folks out at an abortion clinic, I believe in Arizona, who were having some trouble with police pushing them around and telling them what they can and can't do and giving them erroneous orders, and we're working to help them with that. We can help with media outreach. If you've got an event coming up and you want some help crafting a press release or figuring out who to contact in your local media, we're happy to help with that. If you have concerns about a new abortion facility opening, Planned Parenthood, ever since 2007 when they started with their mega mill strategy of building these gigantic abortion facilities, have gotten excellent at being very sneaky about how they get an abortion clinic into a community. So if you have any suspicion whatsoever that there might be a new abortion facility, we can help you research that and then help you fight it if there is one. If you have difficult pro-lifers out at your abortion clinic where you're working, sometimes you get people who are contentious or who want to have their whole message be about yelling and hurling epithets at women or things like that. We've got some experience hands-on here in Aurora, Illinois, that we would love to share on that topic. Or any kind of logistical concerns. If you're not sure where you should be standing out at your local abortion clinic, where the best place is to hold a protest, any kind of logistics or that sort of thing. We've run protests under all kinds of different circumstances, and we'd be happy to give you some input there. Finally, another thing that we can help you with is if you're working with a pro-life group that might be having a banquet or a fundraiser or some kind of event, Eric is available to speak. He's a highly regarded nationwide speaker in the just a couple of weeks here. He's going to be speaking at the Bringing America Back to Life convention in Cleveland. He's spoken all over the country, and we would be happy to see what we could do to get Eric out to talk at your event as well. So those are just a few of those things that we can do to help out. But again, whatever comes up in your pro-life work, We are happy to give whatever we can offer in terms of advice and practical help to get you through that situation. So don't hesitate to shoot us an email or give us a call. Our contact information is all in Eric's emails that you get. So thanks so much for letting me share that.
Thanks, Matt. And now I'd like to turn to our final guest of the evening before we get to your questions and comments, which I hope we'll still have a little time for. And that is my father, Joe Scheidler, who's been a pro-life activist since 1973. That's right, since the very year that the Supreme Court handed down Roe versus Wade. In 1980, he founded the Pro-Life Action League to put people like you to work fighting abortion in your community. And just a year ago, published his memoir, Racketeer for Life. Are you with us, Dad?
Yeah, I think so. Am I unmuted?
Nope, you're great. We can hear you.
Okay,
So, Dad, after 45 years as a pro-life activist, what keeps you coming into the office every day and going out to the sidewalk with your signs, even at the age of 90 years old?
Well, you know, when I read Roe v. Wade, and especially Doe v. Bolton, that gave the parameters of abortion for the full term of pregnancy, I was hooked. And then I saw the pictures, as you pointed out, they're absolutely critical. And it was that conference we went to in the federal courtyard. Remember, you went, you were a little kid, and they showed the pictures in life and death. And I just got hooked, and I had to quit my job as an account executive. I still go out because I'm still in good health. I went to four of the March for Life and Walk for Life in Maui and San Francisco and Washington and Chicago, and gave talks there. So I'm still in good health, and the battle still has to be fought. Abortion is still the law of the land. We've got to change that. So I'm going to fight till, I die.
So from, you know, many people have called you the godfather of pro-life activism because of your rallying of the troops. And everywhere I go, I meet people who say, I heard your dad give a talk, and then I started sidewalk counseling. I heard your dad give a talk, and I started a pregnancy center. I heard your dad give a talk, and I started an organization that's fighting for life now in Texas. And all these folks. A lot of people call you the godfather of pro-life activism. So from that perspective, how important do you think the protests, the rallies, the prayer vigils that the folks on this call are going to be organizing this year?
Well, you know, we've heard from some, and I think it's very important that the things you've planned are carried out all over the country, because we've kept this issue alive. See, so many things are settled when they're bad and they're settled. This is bad and it's not settled. And so all of these things that you're doing throughout this coming year are critical. We have to be visible. We've kept abortion an issue for 45 years, and until it's the Supreme Court has overturned it, and even then we'll have to fight state laws and so on. Being out on the street, being out with the signs, being out with a large group of people is absolutely critical for any movement, and it has worked. It has worked. Abortion is still a major issue in this country, and I think we are converting people by the ton right now. There are more pro-lifers than we ever had before.
Well, Dad, thanks a lot for your words of encouragement and for your wisdom and the guidance that you still give to all of us. I'd ask you to stay on the call for a few more minutes to offer our closing prayer, but now I'd like to turn to questions and comments from our local leaders. And we give me just a moment here to turn on the question and answer session. Okay, to participate in the question and answer session here, now that we've got it running, you need to raise your hand, as it were. You need to press *6 on your phone, then you'll press 1 to confirm. Again, *6, and then 1 to confirm. And we will call you out by area code as best we can. If we happen to recognize your phone number, I'll call you out by name. So if you have a question that's specific, very specific to your situation, it might be better to email my team about it. But if your concern is likely to be relevant to other leaders on the call, go ahead and offer that. So I'm waiting for my tech, Matt, to let me know our first question. This could be Mark Geetson from Kansas. Mark, can you offer you with us?
Yes. Hello, Eric. Thank you for sponsoring this call, and a big hello to your dad. Your dad and I entered the Tiller abortion facility years ago. And there was television cameras there, and the only thing that we hadn't really planned for is that I was technically at work and on TV walking into the abortion clinic. That was the time he entered Tiller's abortion clinic. I'm sure your dad would remember that. My question today has nothing to do with that particular situation. We have a truth truck, and we need to replace the banner on the side, and we've often used the Malachi visual aid to express the horror of abortion. Is there a better picture ever taken than the Malachi picture to express the horrors of abortion? And if there is one, I want to put the worst picture that there is, the one that people will come by and take a picture of the truck just to have a picture of the picture. So is there something worse than the Malachi?
That's a great question. I think the question that the kind of deeper question is what image is going to have the most impact on people? We've used the Malachi image over the years, and we have dozens of signs with that picture on it, and also postcards and such. And it is certainly a very arresting image. And in fact, the face of that child is surpassingly beautiful if you can look past the horror of what's happened to his body being dismembered. I can't offer you a specific answer to your question as to an image, but that might be something that we can email us about, and we might be able to make some suggestions, because there are some pictures that might do a better job of impacting people because the images that they're not as likely to turn away from. Sometimes we find that, and we found this summer with the new signs that we were using, people weren't turning away from them as quickly and shielding their eyes. They were, they were looking, gazing almost at these pictures. So there might be an opportunity for you if you need to update things there, and that's something maybe we can talk to you about. Our next question is from the 603 area code. 603 area code, are you with us?
Yeah, this is Paul Galasso calling from Manchester, New Hampshire. Eric, thank you for organizing this call. I think getting the leadership from around the country to talk like this is very important to strengthen the overall effort. So, again, thank you very much. My question relates to something maybe different than what we've been talking about, and that is, as a sidewalk advocate, I often think of the people that are coming into the Manchester Planned Parenthood facility. And how much information do they have on abortion alternatives? And I'm guessing that for the vast majority of those that do come for abortions, the answer to that question is little to none. And I'm wondering, as I interact with some of these folks, I have these conversations, and I test whether they've even looked into local pregnancy relief centers or have they sought the advice from people that have had abortions that have a different viewpoint because it's such a big decision? If there was any plans, or maybe there's some ongoing activity that I'm just not aware of, to try to promote abortion alternative, the abortion life alternatives, be a hero, give birth to this child. And if for whatever reason you're not ready to be a parent, there's adoption facilities and very capable parents, waiting to adopt children. If there were a way for us to promote that message so that it can compete with the false messaging from Planned Parenthood that this is really your only alternative, I'm wondering if more knowledge was out there on the alternatives to people that may not be inclined to research it themselves, that maybe they won't even show up at the Planned Parenthood facility.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think there are some groups around the country that are doing amazing work in that area. In particular, I think of the Human Coalition, which is based in Texas, that has been doing a lot to try to use the internet to maximize the place of pregnancy centers in Google search results. When a woman's thinking about an abortion today, she doesn't pick up the yellow pages. She goes to the internet and she types in abortion. And with the right kind of search terms and Google ads and good search engine ranking for our websites, we can be the ones that come to the top of that list. And they've become real experts in that area. And there's other groups like the VJ Caring Foundation that do television ads, and the folks who do pro-life billboards, pro-life across America. So a lot of that stuff is taking place. One of the key areas, though, for this is legislation that requires abortion facilities to provide information about abortion alternatives. But again and again, what we hear from women outside the abortion clinics is, I don't have any choice. I have no choice. And we want them to know that they do have a choice. So I think really the first order of this outreach is you on this call, the people who are outside the abortion facilities, offering those alternatives, because for many women, that's the first time anybody's told them they don't have to go through with abortion is when a pro-life tribal counselor tells them that they don't. All right. Is Gerald Young there?
Yes. Yes. Hi, Eric.
Gerald, go ahead.
Yes. I was just wondering if you or one of the other speakers could offer some insight as to why the Senate Republican caucus is so reluctant to break the filibuster and go nuclear. I mean, they did it for Supreme Court Justice Gorsuch and for many of the federal circuit court judges or appeals court judges. And for an issue like the one that we had this week, you know, why wouldn't they take that approach?
Good question, Gerald. And it's one that I think more and more and more people are asking right now. And what I've been told, because Eric Schmitz isn't with us anymore, but I have asked him and the folks at SBA List about this. There is a real concern, and it's not one that we should just dismiss out of hand, that doing away with the filibuster would result in us getting bit the other side when we don't have a pro-life Congress, when we don't have the pro-life votes that we have in the Senate, and we end up with really bad legislation coming down the pipe because we can't block it in the Senate anymore. Now, we don't want to operate from a position of fear and cowardice, but we also don't want to be imprudent. And so I think that's the argument that they would make. That said, it's not in the Constitution to have 60 votes, a supermajority for every single piece of legislation. And it also seems sort of ridiculous to have to pass really important things like the tax bill with the reconciliation bill, which only requires 50 votes. So I think rather than trying to figure out exactly why they're reluctant and worrying about that, I think we need to really be putting pressure on Congress to get these things done. And if that means calling for the filibuster rules to be set aside in order to be able to do things like save babies from late-term abortion, then I think that's what we have to do. So it really comes down to us pushing the Senate to change those rules. I think we've got John Crete back with us from St. Joseph, Missouri. You were there, John?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Sure thing. And, John, your question will have to be the last so that we can close up the call. I must apologize to the folks behind you in the queue, but go ahead.
Sure. What I'm hearing in my community is that something like a pro-life overpass would be shut down by the police on the ground that it distracts drivers. Is there a way to address that?
Absolutely. I mean, billboards distract drivers, cute girls walking down the street distract drivers, car crashes distract drivers. Drivers have a responsibility to remain undistracted. And our signs on the side of the street, whether it's a billboard, whether it's a pro-life banner, whether it's an abortion victim photo, are the driver's responsibility to deal with. We have an absolute legal right to do this. And so if you decide to get on board with something like the billboard campaign, we will be providing you with tools, a letter from our pro-life law firm, the Thomas More Society, that spells out how this is your right. We'll also be providing instructions for how to deal with the situation if the police are unrepentant and refuse to allow you to do the thing anyway. You know, what do you do then? And we'll let you know, what your best strategy is in order to live to fight another day. Our attorneys usually say, obey now, grieve later, and we've filed lawsuits after being told by the police to stop doing things that were completely legal. So, we'll be providing that legal assistance to the degree that we can, and we find that in most cases, a letter from an attorney like that really has a very powerful impact and allows us to proceed with our plans as we intended to. So thanks very much. It's a very good question. My apologies to folks who were waiting to make comments or offer questions at the end of this call. I'm sorry that we've run out of our time. I'd like to now ask my dad, Joe Schuyler, to come back on for a closing prayer.
Almighty Father, our one true God, we thank you for bringing us all together tonight to make plans for this coming year. We thank you for all those who have dedicated their lives who are on this call tonight to bring this nation back to respect for our little unborn brothers and sisters. We ask you to soften the hearts of all those that we are trying to convert. We pray for our nation as together we work to reestablish a culture of life. We pray for you to help us in these plans that they are carried out nationwide, saving many lives and giving honor to you. In the name of Jesus, amen.
Amen. Well, thanks to all for joining the 2018 Pro-Life Leadership Call. I'm really excited to be working with you again this year, and can't wait to see what kinds of projects you're interested in for the coming year. And I want to encourage you to take heart and to be encouraged that your efforts in your communities are very pleasing to God and very impactful in your community. Watch for that email tomorrow. We'll have a link to a recording from the call and also a link to that Pro-Life Leadership Survey, which will be your chance to offer more feedback, especially if you had a question or comment and you weren't able to get it through today, on all the things that you've heard on this call today. Have a great night, and God bless you all.